Welcome to Catholic XJW Podcast, Knocking on Heaven's Door. This podcast is produced by the Fellowship of Catholic Ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. My name is Jeff Schwem, and I am the president of the Fellowship of Catholic Ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. If you'd like to learn more about our fellowship, you can visit us online at www.catholicxjw.com. Today we have with us Ruth Leone. You're from Kentucky, right, Ruth?
Yes.
And you were a Jehovah's Witness your entire life?
Yes. From the time I was born into the Witnesses, and I became inactive when I was in my early 40s.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background. How did your family get involved in the Witnesses? I've read a little bit about that on your blog, which, by the way, on the show notes, we'll put a link to your blog, which I found to be very interesting and very well written.
Well, thank you. Actually, on my mother's side, I was a fifth-generation Jehovah's Witness. My great-great-grandfather, John Hickman, got a tract from Brother Russell back in the late 1800s and left the Baptist Church to become a Bible student.
So your great-great-grandfather was a Bible student?
Yes, my great-great-grandfather was a Bible student. Then his son, Andrew Hickman, my grandmother, Stella Hickman Purinton, then my mother, Anna Board, and then me.
So the Jehovah's Witness tradition came primarily from your mother's side of the family?
Yes, my father became a witness after World War II. His brother had married one of Jehovah's Witnesses and witnessed to him while he was still in the Navy. And then after he got out of the Navy, he met my mother, and he and his mother both became witnesses at that time.
Okay, so you are intimately familiar with the whole 1975 issue. Why don't you explain that for us and then tell us what your experience was during that time?
Well, I remember in 1969, I was attending the International Convention in Atlanta, Georgia, working in the kitchen tent, and Brother Franz released a book called Dennis Finished the Mystery of God. And that book contained a timetable which indicated that the thousand-year reign of Christ should begin in 1975. So that meant that Armageddon and everything else should be over with by the fall of 1975.
Now didn't they reason this with something to do with how long creative days were and all that kind of stuff? Do you remember how they reasoned that?
Oh, yes. Let's see. There were six creative days of 7,000 years each, and man was created toward the end of the sixth creative day. God rested on the seventh. 6,000 years of human history, according to the count of their chronology, was going to end in the fall of 1975. Therefore, Brother Franz said, the millennium will start then.
Okay. So the last part of the seventh creative day, because they believed all the creative days were 7,000 years long.
Yes. So interesting that they knew that.
Didn't he have another book, too, something like Life Everlasting and the Sons of God or something like that?
Life Everlasting and Freedom of the Sons of God, yes, for anyone who is able to wade through it.
Well, you might describe Fred Franz's writing style. I remember reading his books, and he's got that very interesting writing style and very interesting syntax when he talks. And if you ever heard him speak in public, it was rather odd. I don't know if you can explain that any better than I can, but...
Well, in 1984, at the annual meeting, I guess it was the centennial annual meeting of the Once Church Society in 1984, my family was invited to attend that, and Brother Franz delivered an address at that assembly also, and he did have a most interesting style, and on occasions such as that where he probably didn't have a script, he could say some pretty amazing things that after he was done, I was hoping there were no newspaper reporters nearby. For example, he said, soon there will be no corporations on the face of the earth because there will be no state of Pennsylvania. And he was still expecting Armageddon to come, you know, momentarily. So.
Let's back up a little bit. When you were living as a witness prior to 1975, what was that like? I mean, I would imagine you went to high school. Did you have an opportunity to go to college, and was that discouraged or encouraged? Did they force you to go from door to door even more than you otherwise would have? I mean, how did that work?
Well, I was very willing in going from door to door. I enjoyed the ministry. I liked talking to people. I was outgoing and somewhat precocious as a youngster, and door-to-door ministry was probably the most interesting thing that we did. So we didn't do very many interesting things. So I enjoyed the door-to-door ministry. I was baptized when I was 14 years old in 1967, and it was always my goal to be a pioneer, and I hoped eventually to be a missionary. And so when I was in high school, I won an award. It was a national English award. And so I received all these scholarship offers from various schools. And briefly, I considered the possibility that maybe I should go to college, but my father rapidly discouraged that, any thoughts along that line. So I put all the scholarship offers in a box and in the back of the closet. And I proceeded to pioneer directly out of high school. And then met my husband and got married.
Now, when you would attend, like, circuit assemblies and district conventions prior to 1975, what was the message that you got at those events? Because I meet Jehovah's Witnesses today who will say, well, the society never really said that the end was coming in 1975. It was certain people within the society that got overly excited and said it was going to happen.
Well, everyone I knew was expecting the world to end as we know it by October of 1975. I wondered about some things because in 1974, when my husband and I got married, the same month that we got married, our congregation broke ground for a new Kingdom Hall. And I thought it was rather odd to be building a new Kingdom Hall if Armageddon was coming in a year. But we were all encouraged to spend as much time as possible in the ministry. My father was not really in favor of my getting married even. He felt that the time was short and that it was not a time to be getting married. And if I got married, certainly I should not start a family because I should not have any children until the new world. So my whole life was bound up in this. In the spring of 1975, my father's brother, the one who brought him into the witnesses, died. We went to see him at the hospital before he passed away. And the last thing that he said to me was, "You will get to see it. I won't get to see it, but you will get to see it." Because he believed so strongly that the end was coming.
Did you know of anybody in your congregation that openly said, "Oh, the 1975 thing, I don't believe that"?
No. In fact, we were having a huge increase in people coming into the congregation. I assume that that's why we were having to build a new Kingdom Hall at that time. We were having a huge increase, and there were people who were selling their homes and moving to where the need was greater. My father was always very careful about financial matters and things, I remember him talking privately with my mother at home about being worried about some of the brothers and sisters who were taking out loans and getting credit cards and things with the idea that, you know, Armageddon was going to come and they weren't going to have to pay these things off. And he was very upset and worried about these people because my father, interestingly enough, said, "Well, you know, we're not serving Jehovah for a day." But still, he preached the same thing that everybody else did.
1975 comes and goes, and nothing happens. What happened in your congregation at that time?
Well, we were still in the process of building our new Kingdom Hall. I think it took us about 2 years. When we dedicated our new Kingdom Hall, we filled it up. And that was virtually the only time that I ever saw that hall completely full. People who had become witnesses and been baptized in that period of time when I was in high school and then immediately after leading up to 75, most of the people who became witnesses during that period of time in our my particular area disappeared. They just left. My husband had become a witness in 1972 in Pennsylvania, leaving the Catholic Church to become one of Jehovah's Witnesses. He didn't leave. He stuck around. But the influx had been huge, and then the departure, they came in the front door and went out the back door, was how some people termed it.
And so did it ever level off at all, the exodus?
It leveled off because the people that were left were basically the people that were there to start with when it was done. But as I understand things, in my particular area, the decrease in the number of witnesses has continued to the point where there are quite a few fewer congregations now than there were back when I was an active witness.
Yeah, I have this dream periodically that eventually all the Kingdom Halls will be donated to the Knights of Columbus for Knights of Columbus work.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll happen soon.
We hope so.
So after 1975, here we are in the 1980s. You're still an active witness, going from door to door, raising your family as witnesses. Is that the case?
Yes. I had my first daughter in 1977. My father was still strongly objecting to the idea that we should have children. Interestingly enough, we had a good friend who said, well, you know, if you expect God to be able to take care of you at Armageddon, what makes you think he can't take care of your children? I very much wanted to have a family. So, yes, in fact, in 1982, when I had my third daughter, I stopped working at my paying job and was, because my husband had a good job, I was able to stay home, be a stay-at-home mom, be an auxiliary pioneer on a regular basis. I also volunteered at my children's schools, and I conducted quite a few home Bible studies with people, and unfortunately there are quite a few people who are witnesses now because I was so active.
Yeah, I understand that feeling. So what was it that made you start to doubt about what the witnesses were teaching?
I didn't start to doubt the witness teaching, but I started to develop some anger with God when my father developed cancer and died in 1991. After that, I had a lot more difficulty attending meetings and participating in the meetings and the field service, but I would make myself go on sheer force of will. My children were getting older. The youngest became a teenager, and teenagers get into things. They have their problems. My husband was a ministerial servant. I was still a very active witness. Our children had various difficulties, and the event that really stopped me in my tracks as far as the ministry was concerned, which the ministry had been my whole life, was when my youngest daughter, we were visited in our home by three elders. Two of the three elders my father had studied with, and they had become witnesses in my lifetime. I knew them. I mean, I knew all of them. I'd known them since I was a child. So I didn't think it was weird or unusual that three elders came to my house. So they came to my house and wanted to talk to my youngest daughter. At the end of the meeting, they decided that she was no longer to be a publisher and that there was going to be a public announcement of this. And she was not baptized. She was 13 years old. And I knew enough from growing up with a father who was a congregation servant, you know, basically the pastor of the congregation, and had dealt with these things for years. I knew enough to know that that was not right. That was not the right way to deal with that. And so when they told me that I could not take her along with me in field service and going from door to door, I just stopped going because I, deep down inside, I knew that my primary job as a mother was to take care of my children.
And it's amazing because that's not ever really explicitly said to us as witnesses, is it?
No, that's not said to us. I think I learned that from my mother instead of from the congregation.
So this incident happened with the elders, and so you stopped going in field service. What year was this? This was in the mid-90s?
This was in the mid-90s. It was also a time when we were having financial difficulties as a family. The plant where my husband had worked for 17 years was shutting down, and he was going to be out of work. He started attending college. One semester later, I started attending college at night, too. So I stopped going out in the field ministry, and then our meeting attendance became less and less. I remember one Sunday morning when I woke up and I thought, I'm just not getting out of bed. And I wondered if anybody else would, you know, because I had a husband and three children, but nobody else did. So I was obviously the little engine that was pulling the train. So the train didn't go.
Did you get any flack from the congregation for going to college during that time?
No, because in 1992, there was a brochure that came out to the effect of that secondary education could be beneficial in certain circumstances and that perhaps we should provide secondary education for our children so that when they started pioneering that they wouldn't have to work such long hours. Now, that was another thing that bothered me in 1992 when I got that because I thought, from the standpoint, not from the standpoint of myself from years ago, but from the standpoint of myself as a mother, I didn't have a college fund for my children. How was I going to send them to college? I never planned for it. So then when my husband was laid off from work and the plant shut down and we qualified for financial aid, I jumped at the chance to go to college.
Where were you spiritually at this time? You're kind of becoming an inactive witness. Were you starting to question the doctrines at all, or was it still basically, I don't have time to go because I'm in college? And
I was really in a sad place. When I was growing up, I remember my father saying things like, well, if you're not going to be a wholehearted witness, then you might as well go out and take advantage of all the world has to offer because that's all you're going to get. So it was pretty much my attitude. You have to understand the way I felt. The reason I stopped going out in field service and stopped going to meetings was not because I believed that the witnesses were wrong. It was because I believed that I was not good enough to be one. I felt like if my children had transgressed to the point that they couldn't accompany me in the field ministry, then it was worthless for me to go. If I could not teach my children properly, how could I go out and teach other people? So for many years, I just believed that I wasn't good enough. And I believed that this world was all I had. I was going to die whenever Armageddon came, or whenever I died, I wasn't going to wake up. And that's just what I accepted as my life.
There's a lot of former witnesses who, or inactive witnesses, who take that position. I remember when my wife and I first became inactive, and my brother-in-law, too, we would have these discussions periodically with my in-laws, who were still active witnesses at the time. And I remember my brother-in-law telling us, well, yeah, I just had a discussion with my mother, and I just told her that the reason why I'm not a witness anymore is because I'm not good enough for God. And so, you know, there are quite a few people out there who have this position that, well, the witnesses were correct about everything, and since I can't live up to their expectations, I'm just not good enough for God, so I just should live my life the best I can and just wait for God to kill me.
Right. That's where I was. I had been introduced to volunteerism even while I was an active witness by volunteering in schools. And when I started working for a paycheck, I was working in an alternative school with troubled children. And the teacher of the alternative school was a very devout Christian. He was Church of Christ elder. And he helped me to see that I actually was depressed and not very happy, and he helped me to see that by helping other people, I could be happier myself. So I threw myself into charitable activities as well as going to college and having a job and raising my kids. I really believe, in looking back, I'm quite sure that God was sending me the mentors and the people in my life who I needed the most at the particular time and situation that I was, because I had wonderful Christian friends from the time that I started college and stopped doing the witness thing. I had wonderful Christian friends and who all tried to get me to go to church, but I didn't go to church, but I worked with them in their charitable activities.
That's great. So what happened next?
Well, I guess I just have to fast forward all the way down to, say, 2005. You're looking at almost a decade here.
So about 10 years in this kind of semi-agnostic state where you kind of believe in God, you sort of believe you're not good enough for Him, you think any moment now God's going to come and destroy you for not living up to the witness way of life. Is that correct?
Yes. It was a very sad way to live. I had gradually become a happier person because of working with other people and helping other people. And I developed a lot of friends. I got an associate degree at the community college, and then I started working at the community college where I received my degree. I had a very good friend who was also a religious skeptic like me. We're more or less ethical agnostics. We had a lot of moral values and believed in helping people, but we didn't think anybody had the truth about God. Nobody had a pipeline to heaven or anything like that, and so we weren't going to worry about it. Except that in 2005, all of a sudden, she became interested in Catholicism, of all things. And when we would meet to have breakfast or have lunch or walk around the park that's in the middle of our town, she was telling me all about all these wonderful things that she was learning about the Catholic Church. I was listening, and I thought, that doesn't sound like any of the things that I have heard about the Catholic Church. You know, she was telling me about the wonderful charitable activities, and she was telling me about the history and how ancient the church was and how it had given us the Bible. No way! Wasn't the Catholic Church the organization that, you know, burn people at the stake for reading the Bible? No. Yes. So she was telling me the truth about the Catholic Church, and I became very interested in an intellectual sort of way, not in a spiritual way, but an intellectual way. And I continued this interest. She started RCIA, so then she was telling me even more. She showed me her rosary and how you say it. And I thought, this is very interesting. She was talking about the beautiful churches and the rituals that go through in RCIA. For example, the rite of acceptance where they knock on the door and the priest comes to the door and he invites them inside. And I thought, the symbolism of that just kind of blew me away. But I still wasn't. It still hadn't got me at heart. Then in January of 2006, I had an overwhelmingly sad emotional experience. My daughter gave birth to a baby that was way too early, and the baby only lived for a few hours. I knew when they handed him to me, instead of rushing him to the NICU, that I was taking my grandson to his mother so that he could die. And I was devastated. And I had nothing that I could say to my daughter. I didn't believe in anything. I couldn't give her any comfort. I didn't know what happened after you die. I couldn't, and I was just lost. It was a couple of months after that I really started paying attention to the things that my friend was telling me about the Catholic Church. Her sponsor gave me a Catholic Bible, and I started to read the Bible again. I tried to pray. I hadn't prayed for years. By November 1st, 2006, I had just about decided that the Catholic Church represented God, but I was still terrified.
What were you scared of?
I guess I was afraid of being rejected. I was still afraid that I wasn't good enough.
So you were afraid that you were going to be rejected by the church?
I don't know. It's an irrational sort of fear, you know.
You were afraid that you were going to be rejected by your former Jehovah's Witness associates or family that might have been somewhat anti-Catholic?
Well, my former Jehovah's Witness associates had already left me in the dust a long time ago. Of course, I knew that if I started going to the Catholic Church, that that would turn into something even more, you know. But I guess it was mainly, I told my friend, I said, I think if I walk through the door of the Catholic Church, that God's going to hit it with lightning and it's going to go up in flames. I just, you know, and she said, boy, you really think you have a lot of power, don't you? And I thought, well, I know, this is, I told you it's irrational.
The first time I ever walked into a church, I had those same type of irrational fears. And I think for people like me and you who were raised in the witness mindset where all churches, Catholic or not, are evil, I just think that's part of the programming we have to get over as we go into a church for the first time.
Well, I'm glad to know that I'm not too weird.
No, you're not. You're just a typical former Jehovah's Witness trying to come home to the church. And those, and that's one of the things, you know, that I think sometimes cradle Catholics and other Christians don't realize. They don't realize how ingrained that has been into us, particularly if you've been raised in it, particularly if you've grown up in it.
That's true. I have a very thick notebook, which I think I'm going to bring to you when I come to Weirton so I don't have to mail it, that my grandfather put together. It's just, it's cut and paste of Watchtower and Awake articles from the 50s and the 60s that are so blatantly anti-Catholic. I mean, they have cartoons, line drawing cartoons of Catholic hierarchy in ridiculous situations. I mean, it's not even, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous is what it is.
No basis in fact or reality.
Right, but this is the kind of stuff that I have been fed for my whole life.
Right, and I got stuff like that too. Many of my relatives that became witnesses were formerly Catholic, and they bought into all the caricatures that the witnesses were selling them about the church. And part of it was because they were so poorly catechized, they didn't know how to defend the church. But yeah, this is very common, and that's one of the things that I think sometimes priests and catechists, directors of religious education in the church, I think that's some of the things that they don't always understand when a former witness has come into the church for the first time. They don't realize the hurdles that person has had to overcome internally to walk through those doors and the grace that God has given them in order to do that.
And the other thing that worried me was the fact that my husband is a former it was a cradle Catholic who became a witness, and he's no longer active as a witness, but he still says, I'll never walk through the door of the Catholic Church again. Blessed Virgin Mary and I are working real hard on changing his mind about that. But
so tell us about your RCIA experience. What was that like?
First Mass was absolutely wonderful. I went on November 1st, 2006, to the Feast of All Saints Day. And it was in the evening, so it was the children's mass, and they had the children all dressed up as all the saints. And the presiding priest was a wonderful priest, Nigerian priest, Father Anthony, and he did a beautiful mass. And when it came time for communion, my friend asked me if I wanted to go up for a blessing. And I thought, well, you know, I'm already here, so I might as well. So I went up and bowed my head, and this wonderful holy man called down a blessing on me. He said, the blessing of the Lord Jesus Christ be with you now and forever. And I cried. I don't know how long it took before I stopped crying. I cried from the time that he blessed me until long after I'd left the church. I thought, people that I've known my whole life won't even speak to me. This man who has never seen me before calls down a blessing for me. Also, the scripture, the songs, the prayers, the chants, everything resonated with me. I recognized every single word of the Mass because it's all from the Bible. And I knew the Bible. So it just, I knew from my first Mass that I had to be Catholic, but I was scared to death of how I was going to get there. I was afraid of my husband's reaction. I was afraid that my becoming Catholic or wanting to be Catholic might shove him back in the direction of the witnesses. And aside from his reaction, there wasn't much else that bothered me. I knew my sister would be very upset, but she lived 400 miles away, so that wasn't too much of an issue.
So you started going to Mass regularly after that?
No. The first Mass I went to, my husband didn't know about. The second Mass I went to on Christmas Day of the same year, and he didn't know about that one either. And I didn't deceive him. I just didn't tell him that I went. If he had asked me where I went that day, I would have told him where I went. But he didn't ask because why would he? But when I went to the Mass on Christmas Day, I just cried through the whole Mass, not from the time of the blessing, just through the whole Mass. And it just had such an effect on me. I just knew that this was what I wanted. I wanted to be Catholic.
What was it about that Christmas Mass that touched you so much?
Well, this was the Christmas morning Mass. Because I was a witness and because the witnesses teach that celebration of Christmas actually devalues Jesus. You know, we're looking on him as a baby instead of looking on him as the reigning king and all these things. By this time, by December 25th, 2006, I had already come to the conclusion that Jesus was God. So to look at the nativity scene and realize that there was God in the person of a baby in his mother's arms was just amazing. I couldn't believe that I was actually starting to believe these things. Part of me was standing off to the side and saying, hey, wait a minute here. And part of me was saying, God, you've got to be kidding. You really want me to be Catholic? By this time, I had found your website. I had read conversion stories. I had founded a discussion board. I was a member of a discussion board on the web of former Jehovah's Witnesses. I met a couple who had become Catholic on that board. And so I got some support as a former Jehovah's Witness, mostly from the internet and from telephone conversations and from emails.
Well, how important was that? How important was that you found other former Jehovah's Witnesses who had left and become either Christian or Catholic? How important was getting that kind of support?
Well, if I had not found that kind of support, I don't know how I could have become Catholic, because even though my heart was very much won over to the church, I had all these nagging questions, like how do I prove that the Trinity is true, and how would I disprove that what the witnesses say about the soul dying and there not being any eternal punishment, or how do I know for sure that everyone who receives Jesus Christ is going to heaven? And that this idea of people living on earth is not valid. I had not read any witness literature for many years. And when I first started studying Catholicism, I studied Catholicism to itself. I didn't go in and study Catholicism and compare it to what the witnesses taught. I studied it as a whole. But as soon as I realized that I wanted to be Catholic, I knew I was going to have to face questions from my husband, questions from my children who, although they had never been baptized as witnesses, had been taught all their lives witness doctrine, and answers maybe and questions maybe from other people. So I found myself in the strange position of having to go dig out my witness books and figure out how I could defend Catholicism against what the witnesses taught. And if I hadn't found people like you and Tom Cabine and Jim Whitney, I don't think I could have gotten, well, I know the Lord could have brought me here, but he wouldn't have gotten me here this fast.
So you went to the second Mass. When did you start RCIA?
I started attending Mass regularly in January 2007, but because I had only been baptized as a Jehovah's Witness, I had to go through the full RCIA class, and it didn't begin until August of 2007. So I started RCIA in August of 2007 with a view to coming into the church. I was I was sure I wanted to be Catholic. I mean, I was completely convinced that I wanted to go through RCIA and become Catholic by, say, March of 2007. I had laid all of my doubts aside by that time, but I still had to wait before I could start RCIA.
And that, what was that waiting time like?
It was hard. I wanted to receive communion so bad. And I wanted to be Catholic. I didn't want to, I wanted to stop being an ex-something. I didn't want to consider myself an ex-Jehovah's Witness anymore. I wanted to just be able to say, I'm Roman Catholic. And I had to wait.
Was it worth the wait?
Oh, yes. It was absolutely worth the wait. And I know that my conscience was being formed over that time and that I was developing patience. And also that time provided a lot more time for my family to get used to the idea. Somewhere in mid-January, I informed my husband that I had gone to Mass a few times and that I wanted to keep going to Mass and that I wanted to be Catholic. And he thought that it was a phase that I was going through and that I would outgrow it. And I hope everyone will pray for him because he is a really, really good man. He works with troubled kids in a residential treatment facility. He does a lot of charitable work himself, and he would be a wonderful Catholic.
Well, actually, he is.
Well, he is Catholic, yes, but he needs to be a practicing Catholic.
He's a fallen away Catholic. We need to pray for all of our brothers and sisters who have left the church, that they'll come back home, and I'll make sure that I'll include the reconversion of your husband in my daily rosary intentions. And I encourage the people listening to this to do the same. So, when did you come into the church? It was Easter Vigil.
It was March 22nd, 2008. It was the Easter Vigil, and strangely enough, it was also the Jehovah's Witness Memorial was held that night. So that was a very unusual circumstance, and the confluence of events gave me a great sense of closure. It was like, okay, I finally get to participate in communion on Memorial.
What's the significance of the memorial to Jehovah's Witnesses?
The Jehovah's Witnesses meet once a year on the date that they calculate to be the equivalent of 1914, when they said Jesus celebrated the Last Supper with his apostles, and they have unleavened bread and wine, and they go through the same scriptures that are part of the Catholic consecration at every Mass. But because Jehovah's Witnesses believe that only 144,000 people comprise the heavenly class, are actually Jesus' brothers, then the vast majority, and they believe that only those people who have the heavenly calling should actually partake of communion. And so a memorial of Jehovah's Witnesses consists of prayer over the bread and prayer over the wine, and the bread and wine being passed from person to person in the congregation, and sometimes no one partakes. Over the years that I was a witness, usually there were one or two individuals in our congregation who believed that they had the heavenly calling, so there would be one or two people who would partake of communion once a year. And For the rest of us, we were obligated to be there, and we were obligated to physically take the cup and pass it to the next person. And so I had, for, let's see, 54 times I had attended, well, actually it was 53 because I missed one. 53 times I had attended the memorial. Of course, when I was a baby, I couldn't hold the cup, but I had attended that service without participating in communion. But on March 22nd, at an Easter Vigil of the Catholic Church, I was baptized and confirmed and received Holy Communion.
So you've been in the church for a few months now. What are you going to be attending?
am planning on being in Wheaton, West Virginia for the conference, the Welcome Home Conference. I'm looking forward to actually meeting all the wonderful people that I've been corresponding with and talking to on the phone, the people that have been my lifeline for the last year. I'm hoping to get a few hugs and share in the Mass and Holy Communion with those folks physically in the same place, not just in the same church. And I want to learn more about the process of helping people who have left the witnesses, because my own leaving was strung out over so many years that it's hard for me to identify specific things. I mean, I know that there are certain things that help me a lot, like volunteering for charities and helping other people and making friends with people who were actually Christians. But the process of recovering from being a witness is, it happened over a long period of time for me. So I need to learn more about how to help people.
Let's say there's a priest or an RCIA instructor or a catechist who's thinking about attending the conference. What would you say to them about why it would be important for them to come?
I would say to them, please come. Because when they are confronted by one of these people who has been one of Jehovah's Witnesses, who's involved with Jehovah's Witnesses, they need to know that there are special challenges here. I personally, because my father had died, my mother died in 2005, and my children had never been baptized, I didn't face quite as many hurdles in becoming Catholic as most former Jehovah's Witnesses do. But there are people who would be Catholic today, except for the fact that in so doing, they would lose their entire family and maybe even their job, because Jehovah's Witnesses are so severe in their shunning of people who join other religions, and most especially of people who become Catholic. And I know from having participated in Bible study groups with wonderful cradle Catholic friends that they really have no comprehension. I mean, I've tried to explain it to them. I've really tried to explain it to them, but it's so bizarre to them that I don't think they quite get it. So I think maybe if they could meet more of us strange, weird people, they might get it.
Well, you know, Mother Angelica always says the Lord needs dodos to do his work, so maybe that's the deal. He's called us dodos home.
I love Mother Angelica.
Yeah, well, she's a big reason why I'm Catholic.
Well, EWTN is speaking. I personally know people who are going to the Kingdom Hall because they have to, and watching Mass on EWTN every single day. So EWTN is reaching people who otherwise would have absolutely no idea what the inside of a Catholic church looks like. When I read experiences in Surprised by Truth and Journey Home and Journeys Home, other books that had Catholic conversion experiences, one thing that impressed me was how similar some other fundamentalist religions are in their outlook on life to what Jehovah's Witnesses were. And that really was an important thing for me to realize, because the mantra of Jehovah's Witnesses is that they are different from everybody else. But I found out by reading some of those conversion experiences that they really aren't so different in many ways.
I have one more question, and that is, suppose a former Jehovah's Witness or even a Jehovah's Witness is listening to this. Maybe it's somebody that you know from one of the threaded discussion boards. And what would you say to them as to why maybe they should take a serious look at the Catholic Church?
I would say that the Catholic Church is where the fullness of God's truth resides. And I would say that God touches us through the Catholic Church by means of the sacraments, and that we need to be touched by God in order to grow in holiness and to become the people that we should be. And the only place where we can receive the benefit of all the sacraments that God wants us to have is in the Catholic Church. And I would say that if they listen to the message of the Catholic Church on its own, and if they can put aside their prejudices until they have time to investigate them, they will hear the they will hear the message of truth in Catholic doctrine if they will set aside their prejudices long enough to really listen.
Well, thank you very much for this incredible story.
Well, thank you for asking me to tell it. I'm just a Kentucky grandma, after all.
Well, let me tell you something about Kentucky grandmothers and all grandmothers and all mothers. They have an incredible amount of power. After all, it was a woman who gave birth to God.
Amen.
And I think this story is very powerful. And I thought your blog, which I'm going to have a link to from my website and from the show notes on this, is outstanding. It's very well written, and if people want to visit it and read it, I highly encourage them to do so.
Well, thank you.
That was Ruth Leone, a convert from the Jehovah's Witnesses to the Catholic Church, telling her conversion story and talking about the ways in which we as Catholics can assist people like her into the Church. And one of the things that's really important is for us to be educated. And I'd like to encourage anyone out there who has a heart for souls, who would like to learn how to reach out to people from backgrounds like the Jehovah's Witnesses. It could be any kind of fundamentalist background, Mormons, anything like that, to really come to our conference and listen to what's going to be said and talk to the people who are there, because many former Jehovah's Witnesses who are now Catholics will be there. And also many people with family members in the Jehovah's Witnesses will be there too. So I'd really like to invite Catholic professionals, whoever you might be, that has a heart for saving souls and for helping people to come to a closer relationship with God. Another thing I'd like to do is I'd like to plug Ruth Leone's blog. You can visit it online at nanaruthannblogspot.com. I'll have this link on my website and on the show notes. Also, if you enjoy this podcast and the other podcasts that we're doing, please go ahead and vote for us on podcastalley.com. That actually, we get a lot of hits from that site, and it encourages people to listen. And if you know anybody in your parish who does that likes to download podcasts, please recommend our particular podcast to them. So, in closing, until next time, I'd like to say our prayer. May the Lord bless us, protect us from all evil, and lead all of us to everlasting life. Amen.